the eighth case of the day, 072697, United States versus Tyrone Funchess.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Carrie Connor, and I am here today on behalf of Tyrone Funchess. And the issue that we have raised, Your Honors, on appeal addresses what has been characterized as a procedural error by the court in the manner in which the district court in this case placed an undue emphasis, undue deference in the United States sentencing guidelines in imposing sentence. And specifically, the court in this case, from the very outset of the plea hearing through sentencing, indicated to the defendant that after determining his guideline sentence, the court would determine whether or not that was a fair and reasonable sentence. And if it was a fair and reasonable sentence, the court would, in fact, impose a guideline sentence. The court explained at the plea hearing that the court would only look to other factors and consider a non-guideline sentence. I believe that the court used the term departure from the guidelines if, in fact, the district court found that the guideline range was unreasonable. This clearly flies in the face of the law regarding the necessity of the 3553A factors in totality being considered at the time of the imposition of sentence.
You know, it just seems clear from the record that I think it was Judge Lozano, wasn't it? Yeah, Judge Lozano was aware of the guidelines amendment and allowed the parties to brief the applicability of it. He also indicated that if the amendment applied, the result would be a sentencing range that underrepresented the seriousness of Mr. Funchess's criminal history. And I have a lot of difficulty seeing what else Judge Lozano was required to do here.
Well, in this case, Your Honor, I think it's important to point out that what the court asked during this, first of all, the court was not initially aware of the revised change. I believe it's in volume 2 of the sentencing transcript that the court asked the parties to discuss that and to brief it. And in fact, at that time, the court questions when we became aware of the proposed guideline. The court specifically asked during that time period, well, how do we know that's going to become effective? Clearly, the court's questioning regarding the amended guideline was not in the context of a 3553 analysis of why the commission had chosen to change the guideline, but was in the context of what was the applicable guideline at the time. After that discussion is concluded and the court rules on the guideline range, the court does not specifically discuss the guideline amendment in ruling, other than to say, I'm going to impose a sentence at the end of the guideline, at the low end of the guideline range, because of the amendments. But the amendments in this case, Your Honors, was not a minor amendment. It would have reduced would have reduced Mr. Funchess's guideline range in and of itself from 92 to 115 months, as opposed to 151 to 188 months. The commission explained that the reason that the guideline had in fact been amended was because of desperate treatment of so-called career offenders in various jurisdictions. And so, in fact, the very arguments that were being made by counsel in terms of the appropriate sentence in this case were those articulated by the commission. The court did suggest that it would consider the government's motion for an upward departure had the guideline been a lower guideline, but there was no specific finding as to that. There was no proposal from the government as to what that departure would be. And in fact, ultimately, the issue in the case is that the court did not seem to understand its duty in consideration of an individualized sentence as articulated in Gall. Specifically in this case, the defense asked the court for a 92-month sentence, which would have been a low-end sentence under the applicable guideline today. Court never discussed that whatsoever. And I would cite the court today to Gall, in which it is explained that after permitting both parties to argue for a particular sentence, the district court may not presume that the guideline range is reasonable, but must make an individualized assessment based on the facts presented. There is no individualized assessment in this case. There is merely a conclusion of a guideline sentence to apply. And in fact, in imposing sentence, the court stated at sentencing that the court did not find, quote, sufficient basis to impose a sentence below the guideline. Once again, this is clearly a presumption on the court's part that the guideline would apply absent the defendant providing sufficient basis to deviate from the guideline. Clearly, that is not the current state of the law. At the time that this case was decided, Rita was about 2 weeks old. Gall and Kimbrough were decided in December, so they're a couple of months later. The court did not have the benefit of Gall and Kimbrough. However, we do have the benefit of all those cases. And it's very clear from this record that the court was imposing sentence under the old guideline regime. Though the court used the words that it recognized that the guidelines were no longer mandatory, there is no indication in this record that the court gave any actual consideration to anything other than what the guideline range would be. And finally, what is very interesting about the case, and
he indicated that even if the amendment applied, he'd have a sentencing range that underrepresented the seriousness of this fellow's crimes, as I mentioned previously.
Well, even if the court was giving a definitive ruling, which I don't believe that is the tenor of the statement, we would have a range between 92 months and 151 months, a difference of as much as 59 months, 5 years, within which the court would have to determine a reasonable sentence. Even if the court were to find that the criminal history was not adequately considered under the 3553A factors, Your Honor, the court would have to pronounce a sentence and do so in an individualized way to indicate why isn't a 92-month sentence sufficient to fulfill the terms of the 3553A factors. I would add, and I think it's very telltale, that in imposing sentence...
Aren't we judging this under an abuse of discretion?
No, Your Honor, we are not. Because under Gall, the failure to adequately consider and articulate the 3553A factors makes it a procedural error and subject to de novo review.
How do you know he didn't consider it? Aren't you just misconstruing?
I'm not misconstruing.
To your advantage?
No, Your Honor. The only thing that could be said is to our advantage is that the court was silent. And had the court articulated its position and done so in giving an individualized assessment, Your Honor, then we would know standing here that, in fact, the court had considered the 3553A factors. The court did not do that. And I do think it's important to point out that in the court's statement of the sentence, that the one explanation that the court...
Do you want to leave anything for a rebuttal?
I believe it just went on. I just want to say this one last thing, and I will, is that ultimately in justifying the low-end sentence, the court discussed that there was a 24-month range, in between the 151 and 188-month sentence. Therefore, once again, the court returned to a traditional guideline analysis, not to a 3553A analysis.
Thank you, Ms. Connor. Okay. Mr. Lanter.
Good morning. May it please the court, Dean Lanter, on behalf of the United States government, for the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Indiana. In this case, Judge Lozano properly calculated a guideline range as the guidelines were at the time. He properly found that Mr. Funchess was a career offender. He had one conviction for shooting a man in the leg and then shooting him in the back.
By the way, that brings up a thought. Judge Lozano found that the two shootings were not part of a common scheme or plan, but Funchess was trying in each instance to harm the same man. And I wondered what in the record would support his finding that there was no common scheme. There was certainly a common purpose to the two attacks.
Well, I believe, and that's not raised on appeal by Mr. Funchess. However, that was briefed down below. And the court determined, in accordance with Seventh Circuit case law, that in order for the cases to be related or for it to be a common scheme or plan, you've got to anticipate the second crime when the first crime occurs. For example, you're going to, I believe there's a Seventh Circuit case where they discussed that the first crime would be you go into someone's house and you steal their checks. The second crime would be you then go to the bank and forge those checks in order to defraud the bank and the person out of money. And that was part of what Judge Lozano was relying on, that for it to be a common scheme or plan, you've got to anticipate the second crime occurring when the first one happens. It can't be a case of repeated attacks against the same victim, another shooting against the same victim, another rape of the same victim. In this case, Judge Lozano, as the defendant does not contest, properly calculated the guideline range and applied the guidelines that were in effect on the date of the sentencing in this case. And the record is more than clear that the judge understood at the plea hearing and at the sentencing hearing that the guidelines were not mandatory. At the plea hearing, the judge stated, "I can consider factors not normally considered by the guidelines in determining whether or not that guideline range is fair and reasonable." At the sentencing, he repeatedly indicated, and also, it's important to note that there were three sentencing hearings conducted on this matter. The issue of the possible amendment in the future came up at the first sentencing hearing. The judge at that time heard argument on that and requested a briefing on the applicability of that guideline change, whether he could consider it now and how he should consider it. There was extensive briefing by the parties. There was a second sentencing hearing in which there were further arguments on that, but the judge always understood that he can consider the amendment to the guidelines or the future possible amendment to the guidelines in calculating the fair and reasonable sentence for the defendant. The government's brief on page 14 indicates some statements that the judge knew that and understood that. This is at the very first sentencing hearing. Why can't I take Funchess's argument? Can I look at that proposed guideline amendments and determine what a fair sentence would be? And the government's response was, I think you can look at that in determining what a fair sentence would be. And that's exactly what the judge did. The judge, in pronouncing the sentence, after he initially determined what the proper guideline range was, went on at length to explain why he was giving a sentence at the range he was giving. He started this analysis by saying, in looking at a sentence for an individual, I have to consider numerous things. What would be a fair sentence? I look at Congress's statutes and the background. I have to look at what a deterrent so that other individuals don't commit the same crimes. I have to take a look at my duty towards society and also getting you back to society as an asset, Mr. Funchess. This is where Judge Lozano is going through the 3553 factors and explicitly considering them. He says, Mr. Funchess, I can't have you in society breaking the law constantly. You don't get up to a level 6 by behaving yourself all your life. He then says, you're dealing with the drugs, especially crack cocaine is very serious. He's there considering the nature and the circumstances of the offense. And he finally concludes by saying that I've concluded that a sentence at the present guidelines is fair and reasonable in this case. It's the government's position that Judge Lozano's sentence is entitled to a presumption of reasonableness on appeal. There's no issue that the guidelines were properly calculated at the time the sentencing occurred, and it's also important to note that this is a guideline amendment that has not been made retroactive. there is a procedure for amendments that are made in the future to be retroactive to defendants sentenced in the past. The Sentencing Commission and Congress both agree that this type of amendment is not one of those amendments. The amendment itself makes clear that this is not an amendment to the career offender statute in order to correct any perceived injustices, but in order to bring clarity and procedural clarity and symmetry to the variety of circuits. There's nothing about this amendment that indicates the way that the Seventh Circuit calculated related offenses was wrong or inappropriate. It's the government's position that Judge Lozano appropriately calculated the guideline range and determined a sentence of 151 months to be fair and reasonable for this defendant. He had three prior felony convictions, all for using a firearm in connection with other crimes. He had 10 additional misdemeanor convictions, eight of which did not receive any criminal history points at all. The judge, in declining to sentence the defendant below the advisory guideline range, declined to take Mr. Funges up on his argument that this possible amendment in the future meant that Mr. Funges' criminal history was overrepresented. Nothing could be further from the truth, and Judge Lozano repeatedly emphasized that Mr. Funges' criminal history, if anything, was underrepresented. For all those reasons, the government's position is that the sentence should be affirmed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lanter. And Ms. Connor, you've got a minute.
At page 80 and 81 of Volume 3, the district court states that after looking at the guidelines themselves, I do not find a sufficient basis to go under the November 2000, and I'm not sure if it's 7 or 8, whatever is coming out in November of this year, quote, because I might be considered the 2008 guidelines, no 2007 guidelines, and this is what I wanted to quote, because I am not sure they're going to be passed. The court did not reject the defendant's argument as to reasonableness. The court rejected the defendant's argument because the district court was operating under the presumption that it was to apply the guideline at the time and that the amended guideline was irrelevant. That is not the case under the 3553A analysis. And the court went on to say, quote, and I want to be clear about this, I probably would listen to the government's recommendation regarding underrepresentation of criminal history in this case. The court did not conclude that if, in fact, the other guideline were applied, that the court would impose an upward departure. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Connor. Thanks to Ms. Connor. Thanks to Mr. Lanter. The case will be taken under advisement. We're going to go.